Now, can everybody hear me? Okay, let me reintroduce myself. My name is Richard Cardona. I'm a principal software engineer with Churgeant. For those not familiar with Churgeant, we're an enterprise-grade virtual QA lab management software, very similar to Lab Manager, but I stress the enterprise side of it. As an actual implementation of our software in our Austin data center, we host 800 physical servers, virtualizing 8,000 virtual machines. So we've been in business since 2003. That's the extent of my plugging for my company. Let's see. My plan to speak down here may be foiled. Don't know whether I'm supposed to point this to. Oh well. I guess it's just a fancy laser pointer. Maybe the laptop's locked up. Who knows? Okay. It's off together from up here. So the overview of this presentation is part of the VMware standards track with respect to the open interfaces and formats and the actual VMware virtual disk formats. If you're familiar with other products, they have Workstation Player, GSX, which was the pre-product before server, and the three types of disk formats that these products support, flat, sparse, and raw. And also, I'm covering a little bit about ESX Server 2.5 and 3.0 in case you guys are still running 2.5 as well. And one of the main parts of this presentation will be discussing VMware sparse extents, which are basically redos or snapshots as they pertain to Workstation, Server, and ESX. At a high level, I'm going to drill down into the VMDK format on the layout, disk types, and what links and extents are, which are subcomponents of the VMDK. Since I'm a software developer, I'm actually suffering withdrawal from not being from my IDE. I do have a little bit of a low-level component in the presentation regarding KMDV format and copy-on-write disk, CAUD format, and what that entails in terms of header, description, and contents, geometry, and how extents are handled in the CAUD format. And then the real application, which I think you guys are here for, is redo portability or snapshot portability. I've been dealing with VMDKs for 3 years that I've been at Churgeant, and before VMware opened up the specification, for me it was a very daunting task in terms of reverse engineering. If anyone's familiar with the VMDK format at a programmer level, you would have found Ken Cato's site as a remarkable website that he also did some reverse engineering on the format. Our company, to not be involved with that, actually did its own, but involved a lot of guessing, and it was basically unpredictable. After VMware released the VMDK specification, then I was able to reprogram the way we provided snapshot portability within our product, made it C++ structure-based, predictable, and got rid of the guesswork essentially in doing that. And then there's some final applications, how to share base VMDKs, how to share snapshots across multiple base images, and then I'll open it up for Q&A. But like I said, it's informal. If you want to ask questions during the presentation, feel free to do so. So the VMDK standard is part of the VMware Open Interfaces and Formats, and there's primarily three interfaces, the Virtual Machine Interface, which deals with the VM itself, the Virtual Machine Disk Format, which is the subject of this presentation, and the VMware Management Interface, which I won't be covering. The VMDK format as an open format was announced in April 2005, last year, and is available at this link that I have on my site. And as you're aware, there are other machine formats out there, specifically Microsoft VHD. Microsoft, following VMware's lead, and also when they were partnering with Zen, decided to finally open up their specification just recently, literally last month. I've also had the pleasure of dealing with the Microsoft format, but I had special arrangements with Microsoft where initially I signed an NDA. When they announced their format specification publicly, I was interested in writing some open source for it, but was unable to do that because the original licensing agreement that you asked Microsoft to open their format had some provisos about open source. So up until literally this date, October 17th, Microsoft had some restrictions, but now it's completely open. They have it open under the open promise, some kind of open promise specification. And nice thing about this format is if they're standards-based, quote-unquote, then standards by definition should mean that's the way you do it, but in fact, the nice thing about standards is there's so many to choose from. I kind of like to make a joke about that. So before VMDK, I mentioned all those products that VMware has had in its history as far as different versions of workstation, GSX, server. So they've had a slew of basically different types of VMDKs pre-allocated, and that should be sparse, not fixed. Split files for anyone storing large VMDKs on SAT32 file systems, you'd have to actually partition those in 2 gigabyte files that are split. And VMware has a naming convention that's arcane for the way the disks are filed out. There was no convention or documentation on how they would name the files. You just couldn't really, it was very rigid. You couldn't do anything. In addition to that, VMware software being flexible supports a lot of different IDE and SCSI types. And then they were also product specific. Before VMware decided to standardize, there was a different format for workstation, a different format for GSX, a different format yet again for ESX. And on the tool side, when you're dealing with these disks on the command line, you had various different tools you had to work with as well. PlaneMaker is a tool that came out of the GSX line. VMware VDisk Manager is the current sort of master utility that VMware offers for dealing with VMDKs. And then people that use ESX should be familiar with VNKFS tools, which is a utility used to import and export VMDK files between ESX and their other products. The advantage now of the open format is essentially they have one format, beginning with Workstation 4 and 5.5 through GSX Server 3.2 and ESX Server 2.5. That is one universal compatible VMDK format that's theoretically portable and all that. And then they've continued that compatibility with Workstation 5.5 and supposedly 6. I haven't actually had a chance to look at that. VMware Server 1.0 and VI3. There are exceptions to the open format, which I don't know. VMware talks about them in specification, but they don't really discuss in a lot of details. One of them is the raw format. If you store virtual disks on physical disks, you're actually referencing logical partitions on a physical disk, or you're storing them by partitioning your SAN as raw SAN partitions that you make directly available as a SCSI device to virtual machine, VMware doesn't really document that at all. And also, if you use their desktop ACE product, which has basically encrypts the VMDK, they don't describe how that's encrypted or how you decrypt it or how you get at that contract, presumably because they need it to be secure as part of the contract with the ACE product. But the net-net of all of this is that having an open VMDK format is there's less variation. You know, with now most people on Windows using NTFS as their file system as opposed to SAT32, not to longer deal with split files, they still don't document how they name their files and how you would make them portable if you happen to have, you'd be using split files. And as I mentioned earlier, for the most part, most VMDK management today, you pretty much use one tool, VMware VDisk Manager. Unless, of course, you're still on ESX, you do need to use NTFS tools. But the net-net is it's one tool on whatever platform you happen to use, and there is less conversion. The other thing about open format is it does begin to build a true ecosystem of tools. I myself am sitting on a lot of code that I would like to distribute. And if people have ideas for open source on things related to the VMDK format, I'd be very interested. I would like to productize a lot of the code I'm sitting on and give it away for free so that people could do things like mount VMDKs on hosts, maybe even on non-Windows platforms like Linux, inspectors, repair these things. My company's, they said we have 8,000 virtual machines, and we have had power outages in our data center. And one of our biggest pain points is recovering redos after power losses. So I'll touch a little bit about how that's possible with an open specification. All right, so let's get into details of VMDK. At a high level, you have a base disk that's representing the virtual disk of a VM. And then you have the capability of layering snapshots up the top of the base disk. That can be done normally by just activating a pen mode or non-persistent mode. You get by default a .redo file that's considered a link, a delta basically. And the way that works is instead of changes being written into the base disk, the changes are written into the layer, the snapshot. And then at any point in time, you can basically elect to stop writing to that layer or that delta, and then you can start yet another layer of deltas where subsequent writes to that then go to another layer, and ultimately you still have one uniform view of the volume, but in on the host, it's split out between base disk and redos or snapshots, and that's how you get one coherent volume. So that's what base disk and links are. As far as the disk types, if you look at that PDF document that specifies what VMDK is, these are all the technically all the different types that are documented, but in reality there's really only two types of VMware disks. You have fixed size disks, which are fully expanded. The size of the file on the host equals the size that the guest sees as far as the disk is concerned. The second kind, if you've used workstation and server, is you can tell VMware when you create the disk how big you want it to be, say 100 gigabytes. It doesn't preallocate 100 gigabytes. As you write to the disk, it will then save in blocks, they call extents, the changes, and so the disk will then grow. And it's the logical equivalent of only the allocated space on the volume is then stored, and that's a time or a space-saving mechanism, which for the trade-off of the performance is not bad, and that's their dynamically expanding. They do not have that capability on ESX, and I'm not sure what the hindrance. I guess they're really focused on performance for VI3, so that option is not available for that platform. So being a developer, at the low level, one of the nice things is the document basically has a C, C++ style structure that defines what a VMDK looks like. On the right, I have a hex-edit view where I've cracked open a redo file, a snapshot, for a base disk. And, you know, if you start looking at it just as a series of bytes, it doesn't look very intelligent. The only thing you can really tell is that there's a marker that says KDMV, and that's where I came up with, you know, said, okay, this is one type of disk. If you then look at the structure, there's a couple of things I have highlighted in bold that are interesting. The magic number ends up being that special character set or marker that tells you what type of disk you have. The version, because now they've released a specification, I guess they've set it specifically at version 1. And then since this is a dynamic disk, there's a structure that talks about how large it is, the size of the descriptor, I'll describe in the next slide. And very importantly, in case you have a power loss or something like that, or you do a live backup, there's also a field that describes whether or not it was an unclean shutdown or not. This pointer doesn't work very well in lit room, but anyway, this is the kind of information that's actually stored in binary on the right. The left is the C++ representation of the structure, and then the right is the binary view. And the descriptor itself is actually, interesting enough, a text file. It's actually, so this file, the binary VMDK, is a hybrid binary embedded text file. The size is known from the previous block, and then embedded in the snapshot are two special IDs, the content ID and the parent content ID. It's very important to basically be able to pair up parents and snapshots. The ID itself is not very consequential. It's just a random number that's assigned to the snapshot. But the important thing is the parent info, and this is where I'm leading to how we can make snapshots portable, is the parent information for the snapshots is stored in the redos or the children part of the children links, and there's a path, a file name, and the snapshot identifier. Snapshot identifier is just it's not related to the content or parent ID. It's the underscore few digits that you see past the VMDK. Here in this slide, it's actually redo underscore A04600. It's just a random identifier that they give you. But it's an important piece of information to have. So at a low level, what the redo has is, this is actually the C++ representation of the previous slide. It's basically got the same information, the magic number, the version, flags, and the parent file information. The parent generation, presumably is how many levels away from the parent that you're building layers on. And of course, there's a flag on whether or not you this disk has undergone an unclean shutdown. Continuing the description of this, there's a fixed offset from the beginning of the file that has the offset to the parent. And for ESX, if you're using multiple SANs or multiple HBs on a host, the path here I have specified in my example on the upper left, which is ESX Win2K Nail, that is a completely clean relative path. On most systems, what you'll see is an HBA relative link where it says VMHBA, whatever the HBA happens to be. In this case, I have 001-disk.dsk. The key to making like a snapshot portable would be to eliminate any absolute paths or any HBA relative paths and just go in and have a clean file name without any hard-coded values in there. There's a little bit of problem dealing with ESX in specific because it's still kind of an opaque format, especially like 2.5 being like older. The geometry in an ESX file is stored in binary, and it requires 64-bit sized I/O programming to access. On the previous slide, I mentioned that the current text descriptor in the VNDK specification is a hybrid binary text. That means that you could use scripting utilities or even Perl to seek to a specific location in the VNDK, and you could overwrite the paths by understanding the structure, and you don't have to use 64-bit I/O. When you're on ESX and use DSKs that are larger than 4 gigabytes, that precipitates you having to use 64-bit sized I/O. And while that is possible in Perl, for instance, you have to have a special version of Perl compiled for large file support to be able to do 64-bit sized I/O. I do all my programming in C++, so I import like the 64-bit version of the ANSI C libraries, and then I'm able to seek beyond the 4 gigabyte boundary. And the bottom right hexadecimal representation is actually the last 512 bytes of an ESX disk. So one of the elements I'm going to be leading up to is when you have a lot of VNDKs out there in a library central location, sometimes you want to know, hey, did this image come from workstation, ESX? This is one of the ways you can tell. You can always seek to the last 512 bytes of an ESX image, and it literally tells you, this is a VMware ESX disk image. So that's one of the keys you can use for that. Okay, so before Sergeant, in our environment, we have a lot of virtual labs. Like I said, 8,000 virtual machines. We create lots and lots of snapshots. I mean, we have terabytes of snapshots. So in the core specification, I personally had to do a lot of reverse engineering of the format. I had to create disks of various sizes, like one less than a gigabyte, between 2 and 4 gigabytes, and 4 gigabytes. And in the case of VMware Server, I had to do weird things like, well, I could see that I could obviously see that there was a link to the parent in the snapshot, and in a lot of cases it was hard-coded, like on Windows it was C:\dir1\dir2. And what I had to do in order to make those snapshots portable is I would seek to the location that is relative to the parent, and then I would write these special path symbols, ./, basically means relative stay in the same directory. So if the difference between the absolute path to where the parent was and me wanting to make it relative was an even number of bytes, then I would write an even number of these ./s to make it relative, or if it was odd, then I would write an odd number in that way. And that was a bug. I hadn't detected that first, so I had to do that. So I thought it was completely ugly. I came up with a solution that didn't have to depend on it being even or odd. It was a little better, but still a very ugly thing to do from a programming point of view. And now I've had the opportunity to look at the open spec, and we're able to actually look at how well a job I did reverse engineering the format, what assumptions I made. I found out through a little bit of a side note is CALG, which is very well documented, it stands for copy on write disk, is stored in big Indian format in the VMDK. But VMDK itself is actually stored in little Indian format. So I never knew for the longest time. Every time I was validating this to find out whether or not there were ESX, GSX, or workstation disks, I would read the first four bites, and I would do a literal, like net-to-host long conversion to convert that format. And I was comparing KMDV in my code, and I didn't even know that actually stood for VNDK. It just eluded me all this time until I actually read the specification. But it allowed me, basically, like I said, to switch from a surgical seek and offset type of operations that I was doing before to a C-strut style modification and scripting. And then, of course, with that, you get automatic Indian conversion for any things like capacity and sizes automatically converted in 32 and in 64 to the processor architecture that I was working with, whether it be ESX or Windows. And, of course, it let me read the header. I could also verify the parent-child relationships. I could go to the descriptor with a well-known offset, read just exactly the descriptor size, and now I was able to actually replace the path to the parent with a free replacement to the full path because I understood the format now about being more documented, and I wasn't restricted to original data boundaries. I could grow the descriptor if I had to and update the header, et cetera. It was a lot, you know, well, basically the clouds parted and the sun shined on the land. It was a good thing. Other benefits, like I've been alluding to, is you can basically tell where VNDKs are from. I mean, if you're an organization like us, we get images from our customers all the time. We get DVDs sent to us, USB drives, people FTP upload. You don't know whether these things are from workstation, GSX, are they going to be compatible, are they going to blue screen? What's going to happen when I try to use these VNDKs in my disparate environment? With the specification and a little bit of tools, it's pretty easy to tell, okay, yeah, this came from workstation. This is an LSI Logic VNDK. It's an IDE, requires IDE, therefore it must not come from ESX. It's bus logic. And just because a VNDK is large doesn't mean it's pre-allocated. We get VNDKs from customers that are 10 gigabytes, and you would think, oh, no, that must be a fully expanded disk. Not necessarily the case. It could be a 100 gigabyte disk of which they're only using 10 gigabytes of it. So the way to be absolutely sure whether or not it's monolithic or sparse is to look at the headers. Of course, you can also run VMware VDisk Manager, and it'll tell you a lot of these capabilities. But this was before I had the luxury of having some of those tools. And sometimes I have to do this programmatically, so I don't have even the luxury of being able to run the command line tool. And I can tell when a customer gives it to us, because customers swear up and down, oh, yes, I shut down. I did a shutdown in Windows properly, whatever. And I can tell whether or not they just powered off the VM and just sent me the disk, so I can sort of, you know, say, hey, you know, you might want to follow this procedure for shutting down your VMs properly and send them to me. And I can put them together, but, you know, you have to follow that process. And also, if I can also go through a VMDK image prep process, and so if a customer sends me in a bus logic VMDK and I want to deploy it on my infrastructure, and my standard is LSI logic for virtual infrastructure, I can go into the VMDK and basically modify it to be LSI logic, and I can attach it as a secondary device and add LSI logic drivers to it, and it becomes magically a system. In fact, all the images that personally I prepare are bootable as IDE, LSI, and bus logic. There is a little bit of caveat changing between SCSI and IDE. Bus logic and LSI logic is fairly trivial, but the disk geometry format is different between IDE and SCSI, and that's more of the way those standards are written, and it's not has nothing really to do with VMware. They don't really allow you to do that. And if you've ever been prompted to say, oh, this disk was created with LSI logic, would you like to change it to, say, bus logic? They don't allow that conversion for IDE. It is technically possible to do it in almost every case, but it's you're basically out. You're kind of on your own if you do it. So I don't recommend that. And then there's other questions you might want to ask with an open specification. Hey, can I export my VMware machines to Microsoft and Xen? I'm looking at Xen, et cetera. You know, yeah, of course, people ask why. And I'm not here to start format wars because in terms of VMDKs, it's not the layout, the format that's important. It's content is king. You know, I just have an image. I want to potentially run it on Xen and Microsoft. One way that I suggest that you can do that is if it's a dynamic disk image, you can use VMware VDisk Manager to create it, to expand it into a flat file format. Once you do that, the Microsoft specifications are pretty clear too. You can modify the headers and footers. They're not, it does require a little bit of scripting, but it's not terribly difficult to do that. You can modify the headers and footers, convert a VMDK to VHD, and then once Microsoft recognizes it as a VHD file format, yes, the drivers are different. You'll have to install like the Microsoft editions, and you have to, if you're using Microsoft SCSI, you have to install the Adaptec SCSI driver. That's fairly trivial if you know how to do image prep properly. And then Microsoft has the utility to convert it into a dynamic disk, so you can go back to not having to have it fully expanded. It does require it to be fully expanded temporarily while you're going through the conversion process. But then you can shrink it back down to a dynamic disk, and then there it is. You can have a Microsoft image in a, you know, a VMware image in a Microsoft environment with no V2V. You can just do it directly. I've done it myself many times. And vice versa, if you want to import VHD. Now, that's a nice thing. VMware makes that very easy. VMware importer, which is if you use the server or player products, we'll do that. That's version 1.5. And then VMware currently has a beta VMware converter they announced this week that can do this conversion fairly seamlessly as well. But there's a caveat to that. It will not do Linux. My understanding is it will not do Linux images with the specification and this sort of technique that I talk about where you expand it to modify the headers and footers in a fully expanded format and go back to a dynamic format. You could actually import a Linux image from Microsoft. I don't know how many people run Linux on Microsoft, but you could do that if you wanted to. And the other thing that's possible with the VMDK open format is there are pain points that are solvable by third parties. I mean, VMware offers a lot of good tools out of the box, but there are other points out there. Like basically, just do inspection is, hey, let me know, are my snapshots are they all integral? What time were they taken? You know, how big they are, et cetera. Verifying and repairing parent links. If they're not, if you have an error or you have to reassociate something to a parent, you can go in there and repair it. If you want to change the VMDK characteristics, I was mentioning about LSI, between LSI logic and bus logic, you can do that. And then one of the big pain points that I had personally were having experienced actually two power failures within a month in our data center, not the entire data center, but portions of our data center, is basically recovering redo disks that were not powered out cleanly and going into the VMDK or going into the redo snapshots, making sure they're integral, turning off the unclean snapshot, powering them on, make sure they're okay. And then conversions are a big one, but I've kind of already covered that. Mounting on the host, there's tools that do that. VMware has VMware Vitis mount to mounting VMDKs. There are, of course, third parties. Ken Cato did it first. And then there's backup and restore, of course, for VMDKs. So, all right. And now my advanced application, ESX sharing, sharing the base and sharing snapshots. So we've already established the VMDKs are chained links. Normally, if you have a VMDK on ESX, you can't specify the same VMDK in two virtual machines at the same time. Even if you set a pen mode for both of those machines, one of them will establish a lock on the base. The first one that powers on establishes a lock on the base VMDK. So the way to get around that is if you have a snapshot already for a base image, or if you don't have one, you can just power it on temporarily to create a snapshot, shut it down, you'll have a redo disk. You can actually rename a .redo to a VMDK. And that allows you then to make copies of that quote-unquote VMDK. It's really actually still a snapshot in disguise, renamed with its extension as VMDK. You can duplicate that as many times and attach those VMDKs to virtual machines, and they're still pointing to their base as a link. And that will allow you to power on multiple virtual machines based on the same disk, and you can have it write the changes to that disk, whether it be persistent mode or not, because it is technically still a redo, and VMware recognizes it properly as a redo. Or you can also turn on a pen mode to create a next layer link, and then it'll operate normally as that. And also the advantage of this is the parent doesn't have to be local to the same volume that the snapshot is in. You can put the parent on a read-only HBA or LUN. You can put it on read-only LUN on the same host, or you can put it on a remote read-only LEM on a fan. And I did mention that VMware is able, just because I've taken a redo or a snapshot and renamed it to a VMDK, VMware can still create as many redos as it has to, including for backups. It will do redo and dot redo redo on a disk that is a renamed redo to begin with. This isn't really described in the specification, and so I put a caveat that open specification doesn't necessarily mean supported by VMware, although this particular technique is very well recognized and understood by VMware, that you're not in a gray area for me recommending this. But just because you have the specification doesn't mean you can, I mean, I've done a lot of experimental things, and some things work out and some things don't. But I do recommend you do testing. Just because you have the spec doesn't mean you're going to get everything right all the time. And there's also a downside if you do this technique for sharing base disks or snapshots. The VMware management and GUIs don't recognize redos that are renamed to VMDKs. You'll get errors saying, like, disk not present. It's still there. It still works. It's just you do trade off a little bit of manageability in doing that. And as far as how many links or layers or snapshots you can have, I've not found a limit, but performance will suffer if you start layering more than basically two, so I recommend doing a base plus two links. And you still have to follow naming conventions of basically VMDK. I recommend, if you're going to do this technique of sharing the base disks across multiple virtual machines, to keep the name of the base and the content you have in that link or that snapshot as part of the file name, so that you know what you're doing as far as what the different snapshots represent. I do recommend keeping the parents and the layers together. Otherwise, if you move them off somewhere or have them in different locations, you may not be able to assemble them later, and that could be a real problem. So that's it. That concludes my presentation. Do you have any questions? Great. Thank you.